The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business, a podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Laura Slattery, sitting in this week for Ciarán Hancock. On this week's episode, I'll be talking to Irish Times business reporter Ian Curran as he updates us on a seemingly remarkable turnaround for the fortunes of Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency. But before that, it might sound like a case of deja vu, but social media app TikTok is again facing the prospect of being banned in the US on national security grounds amid tensions between Washington and Beijing. Irish Times technology expert Ciara O'Brien joins me now to tease out the reasons behind a renewed push to crack down on the social media giant. Ciara, this is not the first time that the US has flirted with either a ban on TikTok or the forced sale of the app. Why has this come up again now?
Well, the original ban was back in under the Trump administration. That was being done by an executive order. Now they had, you know, they had buyers lined up, the whole lot. But then obviously, you know, things moved on politically and there wasn't much appetite for pursuing it under that particular route. But this now has come back up because while the idea of banning, effectively banning TikTok in the US or effectively banning the Chinese ownership of TikTok in the US, the concerns around it appear to be around national security, about access to data, about potentially the manipulation of algorithms by state actors on the China side of things. That hasn't gone away. And if anything, it's actually just picked up steam over the last couple of years. So this has now culminated in a bill coming before the House of Representatives in the US. And that actually passed with broadly bipartisan support. You know, there were very few people who actually voted against it. So both sides of the aisle were coming together on this one. And they've both agreed that having TikTok, something that's massively popular, that has a huge amount of influence with young people, that is a danger to their national security or poses some sort of threat to national security. Now, you could say, you could argue it's a bit of a tit for tat thing because social media companies that are created in the US, like Facebook, Twitter, or now X, they don't operate in China. We've all heard about the Great Firewall of China, where, you know, social media apps were effectively banned. And if people wanted to actually get access to something like Instagram or to Facebook, they would have to use kind of VPNs to get around the bars that are in place there. And, you know, by and large, obviously, you know, TikTok, it's not a Chinese-owned company. It's owned by ByteDance. This has created some concerns. And it's not just the US. You know, TikTok, the app itself, has been barred from say, the government state kind of officials' phones in a number of countries, not just in the US. The ironic thing is the Biden campaign apparently only joined TikTok recently in a bid, I suppose, to reach these younger voters, because that is where people are. Now, it's gone down, obviously, with varying degrees of opposition, depending on what side of the fence you sit on this one. Obviously, TikTok are unhappy about this. The bill itself is not, strictly speaking, a ban on TikTok. It is to do with the ownership of it. So what the bill says is, you know, that they would have to sell the US part of TikTok. It has to not be in Chinese control or Chinese ownership. And it's been done before. You know, Grindr is one case that gets thrown around a lot. I do think, though, that having something like a dating app versus something like TikTok, where it's a social media app that reaches cross-border, is an entirely different proposition.
Yeah, so there's a few more stages that we have to go through first before we end up with, say, you know, a total ban on the app. And the first one of them is that the bill has to clear the Senate and then be signed by the president into law. And then I suppose ByteDance, as you say, the parent company, you know, they've been given the chance to sell the controlling stake before it's completely blocked in the US. Do you think that will happen? Will there be a sale?
Well, it's not guaranteed that it will pass the Senate, first of all. Now, Biden has said if the bill comes before him, he will sign it. It does have to make its way through the Senate. And they're typically apparently a bit more reticent about, you know, interfering in this kind of thing. It remains to be seen whether or not we'll get enough support to actually pass through the Senate as it is, whether or not they'll make changes and bounce it back. You know, there's a whole other heap of stages to go through before we actually get to you must sell it. Now, if the bill is passed, I think it gives them something like it's 180 days to sell the controlling interest. So basically to get it out of Chinese ownership. And look, there are US backers of TikTok. I'd imagine things are, I mean, look, TikTok is hugely valuable. It's more valuable now than it would have been in 2020. You know, COVID was very good for TikTok in that it had essentially a captive audience like other apps like Clubhouse and, you know, all these house party apps. Now, a lot of those have fallen by the wayside, but TikTok got the public attention. You know, it seemed to tap into something, particularly with younger people. It has a huge amount of engagement and it's endured. So it's gotten significantly more popular than it was, you know, 3-4 years ago. And that also means it's significantly more valuable. So you're now going to have to find somebody with deep enough pockets who wants to take this on. And, you know, then there's no guarantee that the Chinese state will actually allow this. This would have to be approved by them as well. Getting them on board is going to be a huge deal. And, you know, it's not guaranteed either. Now, it should also be noted that some of the states, I think it was Montana, tried to ban TikTok for, you know, people within its state. So the app stores were not allowed to carry it, and that would have come into effect on January 1st, but it went through the courts and that has essentially been stalled. So, you know, there's no guarantee that even if this is signed, that this won't go further, because obviously TikTok are not just going to roll over and let this happen. This is a hugely valuable part of their business. There's 170 million active users of TikTok in the US. Now, when you put it in the context of, you know, there's well over a billion active TikTok users globally. Obviously, it's a small proportion, but it's a valuable portion because of the amount of advertising and commerce that flows through that particular market. So, you know, it's not just a case of them cutting their losses and saying, right, well, we'll sell this bit off. You know, it is a loss to the company.
Yeah, so obviously we're completely in the realm of speculation at the moment. But just I suppose on that question of who would buy TikTok, I'm sure there's quite a lot of anonymous private equity interests and so on. But in terms of tech companies, I was sort of thinking maybe Microsoft, you know, it's the biggest company in the world. It's got LinkedIn, but maybe it wants to tap into that kind of youth audience. What do you reckon? Would they be interested?
Microsoft was, you know, that Microsoft was in the frame the last time this came up. But what you have now since then is also a move to break up big tech companies. So the likes of the people who could afford to buy TikTok, who have the deep enough pockets to buy TikTok, Microsoft, Google, Meta. Well, even if they did want to buy them, you know, they're unlikely to get that through antitrust law as well, because now obviously the US authorities, at the same time as they want somebody else to buy the US part of TikTok, they're also massively wary of consolidating huge amounts of power within these big tech companies. If you were to put the US part of TikTok in the ownership of an existing big tech company, that just consolidates power. That is going to ring alarm bells all over the place. It risks being blocked. And, you know, I mean, that's just going to be a lot of wasted time and a lot of wasted effort for everybody involved.
Yeah, I certainly can't see Meta being able to get its hands on TikTok, although 170 million users, as you say, is attractive to anyone. I mean, some of this story actually reminds me of something that's happening in the UK at the moment, where the government there has recently moved to block a UAE-backed fund from taking over The Telegraph, because I suppose, you know, the sensitivity of a daily newspaper. But TikTok, I mean, it shares some of those same sensitivities in a way. I was reading that about 14% of US adults regularly get news from TikTok, and a third of under 30-year-olds there get news from TikTok. So it is a hugely important and, you know, source of information for a substantial audience. Are any of them tuned into this drama, do you think?
Well, I think that, look, the users themselves are tuned into the drama because TikTok has been drumming up support for, you know, getting people to contact the representatives and express their opposition to it. You know, TikTok has been quite active in doing that. I think I can see the logic in, you know, kind of comparing it to a media company, because it does shape. We've seen this time and time again. Social media shapes people's opinions. If you are relying on algorithms to serve up your news, you are going to get what the algorithms choose. Now, if somebody has control of those algorithms, and we should also point out that, you know, there's an awful lot of focus has been on China, but, you know, the tactics that are used here are also used by, you know, social media companies the world over. You know, wasn't so long ago that we were all looking at Meta for, you know, the different types of algorithms that was pushing content to users of Instagram and users of Facebook. And, you know, so we can't, it's kind of a bit hypocritical in a way for people to be looking at TikTok in particular, because they don't gather data that's above and beyond what every other social media company carries. They don't use their algorithms. You know, every single social media company has been accused in some way, shape or form on from one side of the aisle or the other of manipulating public opinion or of pushing an agenda. So, you know, they are doing what social media companies will do. It's just that in this particular case, obviously, there is a bit of wariness over the people who pull the strings. And that should be the world of, we should all be so wary of who's pulling strings on social media. We have seen how it shapes public opinion. We have seen how it impacts on people's outlook. We have seen how it is impacting politics. And it's not always impacting, while it can be a force for good, you know, the technology itself is neutral. It's the people who are using it that are pushing agendas. So with that in mind, yes, I mean, I think we should be looking at exactly who owns these companies, what kind of power they have, what kind of agenda they have. But your opinion on whether their agenda is good or bad is going to depend on your own politics. And that's something that people are never going to agree wholesale on.
So in a way, although this has the potential to completely redraw the landscape for social media and the technology sector, this is a political story, really, isn't it? This is about the tensions between Washington and Beijing and where they're going to go in future. But it is really staggering, isn't it, that, as you say, the Joe Biden re-election campaign has recently joined TikTok while all of this is going on.
Yes,
I mean, is he going to have to leave?
Well, you know, obviously, if it's barred, he will have to leave. But the thing is, we're a long way off a ban just yet. We're a long way off this being decided. And I think, look, there's never been a political campaign where some element of hypocrisy hasn't come into it. I also think as a campaign, if they want to reach younger people, they have to be on TikTok. So it's kind of a bit of a catch-22 situation.
And does TikTok have any other kind of newer, younger, upstart competitors that are seriously at the races the way it is?
I think at the moment it's the main one. Obviously, Instagram is snapping at its heels with stuff like Reels. But in general, I think, you know, if TikTok goes, something will take its place. Inevitably, something will take its place. This is what's happened every single time. And with the concentration now on the ownership of big tech and the ability of them to kind of, you know, pick up these smaller companies, I think that, you know, that it's less of a, I suppose before in the past, you know, smaller companies would have been bought up before they became much of a threat by these bigger companies. I think it's harder for them to do that now, though not impossible. We'll have to wait and see what emerges to replace TikTok if that becomes an issue.
And do you use TikTok yourself, Kira?
Very rarely. I'm more of a scroller. It's too easy to get stuck in a doom scroll. I don't really post anything on TikTok. I would use other social media platforms first. Also, I think I'm a bit too old for TikTok in a way.
Well, I mean, the Irish Times has been around since 1859, and I believe we do dabble in TikTok from time to time, but I'm with you. I'm sort of agnostic on the whole thing. I hear it is a good source of Kate Middleton conspiracy theories, so if that's what floats your boat. But for now, I think we'll leave it there and see where the progress of that legislation goes, if indeed, as you say, it goes anywhere at all. Thanks, Kira. We'll be back after this short break to hear all about the extraordinary roller coaster that is Bitcoin.
How can harnessing the power of AI help drive your business? At EY, we combine leading business expertise with cutting-edge technology and capabilities. Working directly with you to plan your strategy, we will accelerate your AI-enabled transformation. To learn more, visit ey.ai/IE.
Welcome back. I'm joined by Ian Curran, who's going to give us the latest on Bitcoin and its dramatic resurgence. Ian, Bitcoin has staged a remarkable recovery in the last 12 months, but it seems like only yesterday we were going through what people were calling a crypto winter and the whole implosion of all cryptocurrencies. What's happened that Bitcoin has managed to stage this recovery?
Yeah, so I suppose it's one of the inherent dangers of talking about crypto and the kind of broad trends happening within the industry that things change on a dime. So yes, you're absolutely right. Bitcoin, which is obviously the most subscribed to cryptocurrency out there, the original, has staged this remarkable comeback from the depths that it was in kind of January 2023 after the collapse of Sam Bankman-Fried's FTX exchange. Around then, you could have bought one Bitcoin for about 15,800 euros. €1. Prices have kind of tripled since then to something like 62,000 at its peak there last week. Just in the last 24 hours, however, prices have dropped dramatically as well. And that sort of speaks to the kind of volatility that's been such a characteristic of cryptocurrency since they first arrived on the scene. What's happened is kind of hard to put your finger on exactly. One of the things that, you know, people who are very enthusiastic about crypto will tell you is that the big change came in January of this year when the Securities and Exchanges Commission in the US gave the green light for a new type of kind of crypto product to be offered, a more mainstream version where people can kind of, just to cut out the jargon, people can kind of invest in these funds that are regulated by federal authorities, but they can invest in Bitcoin through them. And that has seen a kind of a resurgence in interest and a huge amount of kind of institutional investment come into the market in recent months.
So there's been a huge response to that, has there? I mean, I feel a little bit nervous about this because people always say whenever the small investor gets involved in an asset, whatever it may be, and it starts to inflate dramatically, it looks a bit bubbly, that maybe that's the wrong time to invest in something like this. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think certainly one would be remiss if you weren't concerned about the kind of rapid resurgence that it's had after the kind of negative press and all the stories that we've seen come out over the last kind of 18 months. I think, yeah, but what it has done is we've seen huge amounts of kind of institutional money flow in to Bitcoin. We've seen the likes of BlackRock and Invesco, very mainstream investment houses and banks, kind of enter into the market. In fact, BlackRock's Bitcoin exchange traded fund, which was this kind of fund that was kind of okayed by the SEC in January, I think that saw record inflows in a particular day in January, and it's massively subscribed to. So that's kind of what's happening. Now, that doesn't answer the question whether these major issues that we've sort of observed and kind of have been highlighted with crypto have been resolved since, for example, the collapse of FTX and the fraud trial of Sam Bankman-Fried and that kind of thing. I think it's very unlikely that they have been. There is certainly a push to make people believe that sort of sorted the wheat from the chaff. But I think what we have seen just even in the last 24 hours is that Bitcoin is an incredibly volatile asset. Its price movements are very untransparent. And what I mean by that is across the crypto space, prices are often moved by individual holders of Bitcoin who hold large amounts of it. It's not like a lot of other traditional markets. It's not quite deep enough. And as a result of that, you see these wild price swings. So that certainly hasn't changed. And I think, you know, even in the last 24 hours, we've seen some evidence of that.
So there is a risk, would you say, of people buying Bitcoin of late getting burnt?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's something that our own central bank is even warning about against the backdrop of this sudden resurgence. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that there's another event coming down the tracks in April. It's called the halving event, which basically will cut the supply of Bitcoin to the market. And a lot of experts think that will also increase the price. So there may be further price increases coming over the next 6 months. But just looking at the actual asset class itself and its kind of relative safety as an investment vehicle or, you know, an asset in which to be invested, we have the Central Bank of Ireland reiterating its warning in recent days that the price of cryptocurrency can go to zero at any time, that people should be prepared to lose every cent that they put into it. And I think that that's probably good advice given everything we've seen, even in, you know, the last kind of 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, because I think people are maybe used to by now that disclaimer, you know, the value of your investment may fall as well as rise. But in this case, you can be left with nothing, with no safety net. And I'm wondering, there must be a lot of tension between regulators like the central bank and the attitude that has been taken of late by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yeah, certainly. And I think one other area of tension that you see is that, like, you have countries like Ireland, which are, you know, very keen to sort of present themselves as open for innovation and that kind of thing. And we have been, to some extent, courting some of the crypto exchanges that have popped up over the last kind of 5 and 6 years. The likes of Coinbase have an Irish operation. We've seen Gemini Payments, which is the Winklevoss brothers, their crypto exchange, also has a base of operations here. So you have that. But on the other hand, you have the central bank issuing very, very kind of almost rabid statements about the nature of crypto, about its utility within an economy, and about the safety levels, you know, associated with it for retail investors. So there's, I think there is a lot of tension there. There is some hope, obviously, that the European framework for crypto regulation that was kind of brought in last year, agreed upon, and is coming into force over the next 12 months. There is some hope that that will create a landscape where companies can investigate the utility of crypto, or, you know, to set up and look at kind of blockchain technology more generally. But as you say, yeah, I mean, there is a massive tension in there between policy and between regulation. And I think that's going to continue.
So you mentioned there that the price had trebled of late. And I believe the all-time high is $69,000. How high can it go, do you think?
I couldn't possibly say how high it go. It depends definitely upon, you know, who you speak to. Huge problem, I think, in crypto generally is that any sign of life within a particular token or whatever is taken as a chance for some of the big players to really pile in and hype up the you know, not just the tokens, but, you know, the technology behind it. And the truth is, we've never really been able to join the dots between what the kind of use cases for this technology would be and what the industry is kind of telling us about it. So in terms of price, I'm not sure how high it could go. I mean, there is some speculation that it could increase heading into this halving event, which is expected in April, but it would be wrong to suggest that other price dynamics might take hold as well. And I think what we have seen in recent days, one of the reasons why the price has dropped kind of dramatically in the last 24 hours is kind of people, profit taking off the back of that tripling in price. And as I say, because it's such a shallow market with so many what they call whales, you know, individuals or groups with massive amounts kind of tied up in crypto, these individual movers can move the market very easily. So it's impossible to say. There is some speculation that it will go up, but expect the unexpected, I think, is always the best policy when it comes to this.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a bit of a ritual, what you're talking about there, the halving. And I suppose in a normal asset, when investors can see something like that coming, it becomes kind of baked into the price, isn't it? When something is a bit more transparent. But as you say, we don't really know what's going to happen here.
Certainly. I don't think any financial advisor would advise their clients to put any significant stock in this halving event, given the kind of price dynamics that we have seen and that volatility that is just seems to be inherent in the crypto space.
So I see the government pension investment fund of Japan has said it's looking for assets like Bitcoin to invest some of the pension fund portfolio in. Do things like that, do they kind of reiterate a kind of a slightly false sense of legitimacy about Bitcoin?
It's hard to say. I mean, we have seen a bit of that going around. Obviously, some governments have been very keen to kind of make sure that crypto companies like Coinbase and Binance and others, that they're kind of open for business, that they're crypto curious. And we've even seen in some countries kind of moves to allow payments to be made through Bitcoin. Does it lend legitimacy? I think it certainly does. And that's certainly something that the industry would be keen to highlight. Does it make the fundamentals of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency any different in the sense of, as I say, that volatility, the shallowness of the market? It doesn't really. And as a consequence, I think there's a kind of limit to how much legitimacy can be gained from that sort of thing. But it is certainly interesting. And I think one would never rule out the possibility that maybe this does become a mainstream asset class down the line. But I think a lot would have to change. And it has fundamental issues that have never really been resolved over the course of its kind of rollout and its lifetime.
Yeah, it always seems to me that there's always been, you know, Bitcoin bulls and there's been the Bitcoin bears. Who's winning the argument at the moment, do you think?
At the very moment, I think it certainly looks like the bulls are winning. But I mean, I think anyone with kind of common sense and who doesn't have skin in the game would say that there are these questions. There was a really fantastic piece by Joshua Palmer in the Financial Times at the weekend. And, you know, he really says that crypto has all of the problems that it has had from the beginning. Initially, the idea was, to create this decentralized financial system and then sort of achieve mass adoption so that you could circumvent the traditional financial system, the middlemen of banks and that kind of thing. And really, the problem is it got stuck kind of at step one. And what we've seen is, you know, first it was the crypto exchanges. They came in and really became the middlemen and sort of obviated or got around or kind of negated the sort of original idea of it as a decentralized method of exchange or asset. And now what we're seeing is the likes of BlackRock and I think increasingly people like, or banks like JP Morgan are interested in entering the space. So it still has a lot of those problems. And I think a high degree of skepticism is certainly warranted.
Okay, so we'll watch that space. But Bitcoin at the moment, all I can say is don't bet your last $69,000 on one. You may come to regret it. For now, thank you very much, Ian Curran.
Thanks, Laura.
That's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Ian Curran and Ciara O'Brien for joining me on the podcast. John Casey produced this episode with JJ Vernon on sound. Thanks also to our sponsor EY for its continued support. Remember, as a subscriber to the Irish Times, you can get the latest business news straight to your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email on irishtimes.com. You can also follow the Irish Times business feed on X, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Laura Slattery. Until next time, take care.
The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.